Okay, why don't you on that?
I was just wondering, for the responses that Michael used to produce this output, are we only looking at people who took the whole quiz and answered every single question?
I think so. Is that the end that we have in, he had 127. Do you recall, Amanda, how many completed the survey?
I think Amanda had said 126 in the last email that we got.
Yeah. So,
hey, guys.
Michael. Are you there, Michael?
Yep. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Dale.
Hi. Yes, we have the recorder on already.
Yeah. So I got a message as I logged in. It said it's being recorded. So
Amanda put together. Amanda's with us, too, today.
Oh, great. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Michael.
And so I assume no Tisha?
The question that Michelle had was the number of cases.
No, from Tisha, so I'm
okay.
Assuming she can make it.
Should be 126 cases. One of the lines was...
We're just talking about the data that Amanda put together for us and that you analyzed, Michael.
Yep.
And my question was to them was just, I think yours said 127 cases, and on her email it said 126. But really what my question was is it only the people who took the whole quiz that we're looking at?
I did it based on that first sheet, which was the complete cases. There were, three sheets in the Excel that you sent out.
The whole quiz and gave mostly meaningful responses. I had excluded some cases who or people who didn't provide logical or meaningful explanations.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 126 complete cases with meaningful data. Okay. And... I have another question for you. Just on the sheet that you sent us, the Excel sheet, there's a whole bunch of, before it says complete cases, there's variables T1, T2, T3, T4. Is that a time indicator just to say how long it took them to do each question or something?
Yes, they're time stamps. So 17:59, 44 would be 5 o'clock p.m., 59 minutes and 44 seconds.
Okay, so that's just to see, and looking at these, were they all pretty reasonable in terms of the time they took? It wasn't like anybody was on here for hours and hours.
Mostly, yeah. Some people were on for about an hour.
Okay.
Or more, but otherwise they look reasonable.
Okay, I see, total minutes. Okay, I'm sorry.
The number of minutes they took.
Right, okay.
I actually did look at the time variable in the analysis I did. It looks like we have a minimum of 6 and a maximum of 448. I assume that's minutes?
Yep, it's minutes. I'm looking at the original data sheet here. Okay.
So.
Wow, somebody did the whole thing in 6 minutes?
I wonder how carefully they answered the question.
6.66 minutes to their credit. They took the extra 40 seconds.
Okay, yeah, we might look at that.
And I'd like to know the one who took 447.
The one who took 8 hours, yeah. 8 hours felt a bit long.
He may have had dinner in the meantime. Yeah.
Or been multitasking.
Probably so, yeah. But if we want to look at time, we probably do need to do some trimming off the ends on that.
Yeah, Michael,
let me just say a big thank you to you for taking a look at that and giving us something to look at. I appreciate that. And I have a couple questions for you on what it is that we're looking at. Should we get to that now or not yet? Does anybody have anything general they wanted to talk about ahead of time?
I mean, I think there is some discussion about, you know, what to do with the cases that Amanda excluded.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're lacking any information at all. There's some information in there. And so I actually think, I mean, those people for their explanation wrote gobbledygook, but my evaluation was done just based on their answers. So I don't see any reason why we can't throw them into the analysis and redo it with them included.
Oh, I see. I'm looking at that sheet now because they've got they actually gave answers for the questions. It's just that they gave nonsense for their reason.
I mean, the way my analysis is done, I think we should throw them in there. I didn't do that because I just wanted to do a quick first pass on it. But
Yeah. Well, the question would be, did they give nonsense for their answers, too? But probably most of them gave a reasonable answer. They just didn't bother with the question.
Right.
But
yeah, and I think you have to write something to move on to the next one. The way it's set up online is that you actually have to put something in the explanation box before you can move on, right?
Yeah, but some people put in XXX or whatever.
Right. But that could also be if there's one that they don't really know, but they want to move on to the next one, then they just put an XXX just to say, okay, I don't know, so let's move on.
Right.
Or if it's, you know, one of my students who knows they're getting credit for doing it.
To answer all the questions?
No, I mean, I just
reasons?
Got a list of who did it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Can you tell who's who? Probably not at this point.
I can.
Oh, because of the code at the end. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So those folks would probably have more complete answers. I think that, you know, an implication is if we want to get good data off of this, it really is beneficial to have a known population of people doing it where they have codes that we can track so they'll take it more seriously.
Right, right. You know, in terms of, maybe I'm moving too far ahead, but in terms of thinking about papers from this, as I mentioned in my text, you know, maybe kind of an ad hoc analysis of the results so far would beef up the first paper so that we would get a little more excited about getting it done and getting it out there.
Yeah, that's
then,
exactly how.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess we should approach it from the reviewer's side and say, mm-hmm. Why am I interested in data that's not very clean, you know, or a population that's undefined or whatever? I shouldn't say the data is not clean. The data is good. But the population is incredibly undefined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's really taking these tests?
Yeah, we have some information on that, but not complete by any means.
What I think we should do is decide what we want the results to be, and the three of us take this test a whole bunch of times.
Practical solution.
Oh, we're recording this, aren't we?
Well, at least she didn't say we should fudge the data, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking though, Michael, is if you're looking at it from a referee's point of view, I'm thinking that if we do that, they'll probably say, well, don't include this data yet because it's not neat enough, but it'll at least show that we're going in that direction, which may help.
But who cares if we're going in that direction? I mean, from the reviewer's perspective, who cares if we're going in that direction? They care about, is this interesting to publish? So they might say, go gather your real data and write one good article on all of it.
Yeah. If I were a reviewer, that would tend to be my reaction.
Reviewers are some hard to predict. You never know.
But anyway, in terms of the question of the ones that we've thrown out here, I would agree with Michael that it might be interesting just to put those in just to see if they change anything, particularly in terms of any of the correlations or any of the results we have. And if so, then maybe they're interesting. And if not, we can leave them out and say we only stuck to the ones that are, fully complete.
Right. We might start with just a little comparison of the answer distribution for the people who gave then complete explanations versus those who didn't, to see that if they are very different. But
right.
Presumably they could be poolable. And how many more cases would that give us?
30.
About 30 more cases.
Yeah.
That would bump it up.
I do have one suggestion. How do you feel about this? Is that giving some instruction at the beginning of the test, saying for those questions for which you really don't know, in the explanation box, please write, I don't know, or something like that, so that we can somehow distinguish between people trying to say, I don't know, and moving on, and people just putting nonsense because they need to get to the next question so they get credit for doing it.
Yeah, a couple of people did that, but yeah, you're right. If we made that explicit, it would help clean it up.
Well, let me ask you, was the requirement to make someone have to answer the question, was that a conscious decision, or was that a constraint put on us by whatever software is being used?
That's a conscious decision. Yeah, because we didn't want people just scanning through, bumping through without, you know, without stopping.
Why not?
Well, we wouldn't. We may not get much of anything from them. Well, I mean, it's a good question. What would happen if we didn't ask for people to give explanations? We probably would get many fewer. But whether we would get many fewer good explanations, maybe I don't know. It might not affect them that much.
Especially if you have
classes where you're saying, okay, I want you to include explanations.
Are they allowed to not answer the question and then give an explanation? Or do they have to answer the question as well?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we could change that constraint that we'd require maybe to answer the question, but not necessarily require an explanation. What would happen if we did that? I don't know that we'd get any more responses. We'd probably
if I can just,
hear explanations.
Just one comment. I'm looking on the page right now on the Excel sheet of the people who Amanda excluded. And I would say looking at the time that people spent on this, there's a pretty good reason to exclude a lot of these. We're looking at minutes, 6 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, three, four, five. So it looks to me like a lot of those nonsense answers were simply people trying to get through it to get credit for doing it. That would be my guess.
Because
such a short time.
Can you tell how many of those were from the class? They would have the code at the end.
Maybe one or two.
Yeah, actually only a couple of them have codes. So most of them, I think, were just tourists. Playing around.
So they came in, wanted to look through it, and didn't start spending the time on it. Okay.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it would seem that it would be reasonable to leave some of them out. And if I'm looking at the average time, there's one person that spent an hour and a half and gave nonsense, so they're hard to judge. But most of them are pretty short.
We do have some information on whether they're students or faculty and so forth, and we're just going to check whether they filled that out. Most people didn't fill that out. A couple people indicated student and one teacher.
Is that column 220? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I see students, student, teacher, none.
Yeah. Yeah, but a lot of folks just left that blank. That we didn't require an answer on those.
Okay.
Demographics. Well, some of the ones that did spend more so the question is then, would their answers to the questions be valid if they spent only 3 minutes, 2 minutes on the whole thing? I don't know.
I'd say pretty doubtful. I can't get through the whole thing. Even after having created it, I don't think I can get through the whole thing in 3 minutes.
You wouldn't think it's very thoughtful.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that at some point it's worthwhile to say, let's, at least as a sensitivity analysis, exclude everybody who took shorter than X minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and X can be decided upon based on the actual distribution of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
not Column R shows the distribution, shows the times, and it's clearly pretty skewed. We have a lot of folks that are under 10 minutes, and then a few in the 10
of the excluded cases, yeah.
No.
Okay.
Of the legitimate ones, I think most of those were at least 10 minutes.
Now, I have a question actually about the questions, because when we get to where we're looking at what Michael did, we can address this as well. But I was looking at, we only have those two questions, number 17 and 18, that are on the sampling distribution. And when I looked at what Amanda sent us, let me find it here again.
Which question numbers?
17 and 18. I'm looking at the Word document that Gail sent us that Amanda had put together.
Yep.
And I'm going down to questions 17 and 18, which is our two questions about sampling distribution.
Right. Sample size 1 and sample size 16.
Right. Now, when I look at the answers that people gave to that, okay, the first one, the biggest frequency of people who got it correct was 45%. And the second one, the very last question, the largest frequency of any answers was 32%. So they're pretty evenly spread there. Which means that nobody's actually doing very well on these questions.
Well, but I mean, the one thing to comment on number 18 is that we decided that this question was a little bit vague and that either A or E should be acceptable answers.
Yeah, okay.
For number 18. Great. So actually, when I did my calculations in the SAS, I actually accepted A or E as an okay answer.
You took either one, okay.
I said either one was okay.
Yeah.
Because
E
you
really
said E has that little tail that's hard to see.
Because
that is why, right?
Hard to see, I guess, yeah. It would be interesting to have it just look a little more like the population distribution, just much tighter.
I created a one more recently, since then, where I actually gave it a larger tail.
But it would be almost a 20, but just be real tight.
But I suppose the question that I want to ask you is that in that number 18, what we want them to be able to do is we want them to be able to recognize what shape this should be and basically recognize what the standard deviation should be. Since we're taking a size 4, they should know that, okay, it's about the standard deviation divided by 4. So it should be about 0.75 or almost 1. So we're asking them to do two things in there. Recognize that we should have a much tighter standard deviation and we should have a normal shape. And so what I'm wondering is, do we want to actually ask those questions separately, or is it too much of a leading question to say something like, you know, if before they look at this graph, have a preceding question, you know, if we were to have samples, 500 samples of size 16, by how much should the spread of the sampling, you know, the spread of sampling distribution should be about what? Relative to the spread of the population, or, you know, something along those lines. Do we want to do anything to make them think about it, or we just want to give this question where they to see do they know both of these things?
Well, you know, with this question, one could do this a little differently too. We could have an option. One option is we have two options that have the shape, you know, the normal shape, and where one option gets a small standard deviation and the other doesn't. And we could ask people, give people the option of checking more than one choice, too, to say, could it look like this or could it look like that, make it true-false.
I thought we had talked about this previously, and we identified, you know, the two concepts that we want them to get from this are the shape of the distribution becomes normal and the spread as the sample size increases gets smaller.
Right.
Right. We did.
So maybe we can, you know, take those two apart.
And right, that's what I'm asking.
First, ask them a question about the shape becoming more normal, and then ask them a question about not a sample size of 1 versus 16, but a sample size of 4 versus 16, or 16 versus 30.
Yeah, or 25, so they can easily think in terms of calculating.
Right, sure, 16 versus 25, so you'll get you know, almost identical shapes, but just one of them will be more tightly clustered.
Yeah.
That's an option.
I'm just thinking that because I'm thinking since not very many people are doing well on this, and it's really hard to figure out which of the two, which part are they missing? Which, you know, I guess is part of what we're trying to do is correlate, you know, well, if they understood something about standard deviation, does that come into play? But I'm not sure that just because you can answer the standard deviation questions earlier on, do you really get the idea of how the standard deviation of the sampling distribution is different from the standard deviation of the population. But I would have a slight preference for adding something there along the lines of what you're just saying, Michael, just to tease out that difference.
Well, we could have more than one question. I mean, another just thought on this is if we conceptualize this as a little 2x2 answers or concepts that we're looking for. It's either it will be normal or not normal. It will either have a small standard deviation or a large standard deviation, and have the four different figures represented there. And then we could have let them answer each one instead of just picking one. Just say how likely could it be this one? You know, like from not possible to it could be. And that way we would get more data off of this. Currently we just get one answer. They just pick one. And we don't know how attractive the other alternatives were to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's just a thought.
Well, do you think we all kind of agree that we can make those questions maybe a little bit better to figure out? What is the part? Just because they're all doing badly, it's hard to understand which part they're doing badly on.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, what do you think of the notion of giving the response rather than being pick one, the response being for each one, say how likely it is that it could look like that. So saying, you know, like impossible or extremely unlikely to likely. And that way we would get more data. We'd get data for each one of these distractors on a scale. It'd be nicer data to work with rather than just one answer across the five.
I'm not sure I totally get what it means to be more likely or less likely to be looking like that distribution.
Well, you could say that A is the most likely, and maybe E would be the next
the most likely to what?
B would be extremely unlikely.
Most likely to what?
Well, I mean, but depending on how one's thinking about it.
Could be the sampling distribution.
Yeah, the sampling distribution. If you thought that shape wasn't really that important, you might think that A could be or E could be. You know, if you thought that being normal was really important, then you might think C is possible or maybe A.
Well, what about something? I was thinking maybe something about even along the lines of do you expect the sampling distribution to be more normal or to look like the distribution of the population? You know, something.
Yeah, well, a problem I see with that is that could come just out of memory. That's
the
definition
of
something. Yeah. And so they go, oh, yeah, it's going to be more normal. But do they recognize it?
I think measuring giving an ABCD on a likelihood scale is going to be tricky to work with afterwards.
Maybe so. Yeah. Well, although we know that, but some of these are just not even possible. We look at them and say, no, it can't be. If somebody doesn't understand it, they would think, that could be. Well, maybe instead of likely. I don't know, the multiple choice. I'm just thinking, trying to get some way getting more information on each of these different misconceptions.
I guess what comes to my mind is, you know, bringing back in the question of, you know, what again is our overarching goal? It sounds to me like we're again in this idea of let's make the questions even better. Is that where we want to be going?
I think so. I think we want to get more information out of them. Amanda was thinking maybe ranking them. That might help too, although there might be a big difference between the one that is, I mean, like if we were to rank them, you'd pick one A and say that's it, and the others are not possible. It'd be hard to rank the others maybe.
Well, let me put it this way, Michael. When I was trying to think about this, I was looking at what you had put together, and I was trying to think that what we want to look at eventually is how well do these prerequisites sort of predict or correlate with success on these sampling distribution questions.
Right.
And then I was thinking to myself, well, if there isn't success on these sampling distribution questions, it's going to be hard to figure out whether there's correlations between them. That's where my question was coming from. That's why I started looking back at these particular two questions, thinking, okay, what if people really don't get this? are we going to be able to see correlations with other questions with their success on this? So maybe if we can look for a minute at what you've done, because I don't totally understand some of the graphs that I'm looking at that you produce. So maybe can we take a look at that for a minute just to get a better feel for what we're looking at here, and maybe I'll understand more. Do you mind?
Sure, that's fine.
So if we go to the document that you sent, you've got this TH is what? Distribution questions?
Distributional thinking. So basically what I did is I, for each of the questions, except number two, I don't remember why, but I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with number two.
Okay.
Oh, because number two, there were a whole bunch of different categories that we could use it, but it would take a little more coding to do.
Okay.
So basically, for number one, if they had the word score in it anywhere, I gave them credit for it.
Okay.
I skipped number two because there were too many possibilities. And then for numbers 3 through 18, if they got the right answer, I gave them credit. Otherwise, I didn't.
Okay. And that was when you were setting in your code, when you have it equals 1 or equals 0, it was right
Correct.
Or wrong.
Correct. So okay. If I have something like if Q03 equals 2, then Q03R, meaning did you get Q03 right, equals 1, else Q03R equals 0. So anything ending with an R is did you get it right or not.
Okay. And now,
At the bottom, what I did is then combine various questions into the category that I thought they came from. So the first four questions were the ones that were added just about histograms. So that's the hist category. So what I did is add up those three scores and divide by three. So it's basically telling us what percent of those three did you get right. It's either 0, 33%, 67%, or 100%.
Okay. And that's what, when we're looking at the box plots, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, and the box plots are right. Well, the box plots, the x-axis is splitting it into those four categories.
Right.
So,
and that's why that's different. Okay,
so
I got
that. So, for example, if you look, did I do one for HIST?
Let me see. The first one is distributional thinking. So there must have been four questions because the possibility.
Yeah, so distributional thinking, there were four questions. And so the first box plot is if they got none right. The second one is they got 1 out of 4, 2 out of 4, 3 out of 4, 4 out of 4, et cetera.
Okay, and that's how they
And what the y-axis is I did the same thing for the four sampling distribution questions. So 15, 16, 17, and 18 are the sampling distribution questions. I also calculated what percent of those did they get right.
Okay, I know 16, 17, 18. Let me go back and see what 15 is to refresh my memory. If you don't mind. 15 is about the movie ticket. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, 15 was, if one person asked 10 and one person asked 70, which one's more precise?
Okay.
Question 16, I said that was a sampling distribution problem, but really it's recognizing that a sample from a population and the mean of a sample from the population are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what 16 was assessing.
Right. But I think 16, But it does, but I would have also put that into sampling distribution questions there, just because it's forcing them to recognize there's a difference between the distribution of the population and the distribution of the sample mean.
Right, so I did put it in sampling distributions.
Okay. All right, so then when we look at your
box
plots.
So that's what we're looking at. So that's the box plots. The plot underneath it is the same concept, but rather than looking at box plots, looking at the mean of the samp dist, of the sampling distribution.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, for example, what we see is for distributional thinking, the people who got none of the distributional thinking questions right got, on average, 42% of the sampling distributions right, whereas the people who got all the distributional thinking right got, on average, maybe a little more than 75% of right, three out of the four right.
Okay, I guess so.
And the fact that we see a very strong positive linear relationship says to me that the more you're getting the distributional thinking questions right, the more you're getting the sampling distribution questions right.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a similar pattern to below as well. Yeah.
Similar pattern for variability. Somewhat, well, the sampling one is the one that wasn't quite the same. In particular, the people who did best on sampling did about average or didn't do best on sampling distributions.
Okay.
So there's not that same monotonic pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the histograms I didn't really look at much, but those who did well on histograms did well on sampling distributions. Those who did poorly on histograms, if we kind of lump 0 and 1 right versus 2 and 3 right, we might say that those are equal. Anyway, I mean, this is just kind of giving us an exploratory sense of what's going on.
Exactly. No, I think, so really, the scale on the left hand, the Y scale for each of these is really, we're looking at 0, 25%, 50%, 75%, and 1. There's only 4 possible values for the Y scale, because the sampling distribution, there are 4 questions.
No, because it's the average. It's the average of a bunch of students' answers. So each student can only get 0, 25, 50, 75, or 100, but it's the average of all the students in that category on the x-axis.
But that's what it is for the scatter plot. But for the box plot, we can only have values at the quartiles.
Box plot is also. Their actual scores can only be at those points, correct?
Right.
Yeah. A little crosstab table would probably show the same information.
Yeah, I mean, in looking at the box plots, I didn't find them that helpful. I think the scatter plots of the means are more helpful in seeing a clear picture.
Yeah.
You know, because in particular...
The pattern more,
In particular, we can't tell whether the medians are at 50% or 75% for a lot of the box plots.
A lot of box plots, exactly. Okay. And you did, but I think you did print out, you did do the sort of basic descriptive statistics for a lot of these too, right? Yeah, you have the mean, the further down, the simple statistics, you have the questions, the mean,
was
the
listed on page 8. Okay. That starts.
Look where?
Looking at the computer kind of on the other side of the room here.
So that's the idea of what I did. Again, I'm not at all convinced that this is the proper analysis to do, but this, in my mind at least, gives us the beginning of an exploratory analysis to see, you know, I feel like if we weren't seeing any relationship, we might kind of throw our hands up and say, let's not move forward with an analysis of what we have so far.
Yeah, but the correlation matrix shows it's almost all positive correlations. You know, some are small, but at least they're in the right direction.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that the scatter plot that you chose to do it gives a pretty good idea. We start to get a feeling, distributional thinking is important, variability is important, sampling is not maybe such a big prerequisite. And histograms, being able to read a histogram is important. So it starts to give a good first step. So thank you. Great idea.
Right. And then if you move forward a little bit, what says a four-way ANOVA, it really isn't a four-way ANOVA. It's really a multiple regression model because I didn't use a class statement, if you guys are familiar with SAS.
Okay.
You know, when we look at all four of those predictors together, using sampling distribution as the dependent variable, we find that sampling is not associated controlling for the others.
Okay.
So we find a high p-value for sampling. So that's where I got the message that, you know, sampling is not at least linearly related, whereas the others appear to be at least somewhat linearly related.
Right. Okay. It may be that the sampling questions aren't great either.
Absolutely.
But I think thinking about conceptually, the sampling is really quite a different concept, and I could see how that you wouldn't necessarily find strong relations.
So the samplings were questions 11, 12, 13, and 14. So that's the one about the red, 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 yellow, yellow, yellow. How many reds did they get?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The candy study, and then the sampling, whether you used a random sample or not.
Yeah.
See, I would claim that that might not at all relate to whether they get sampling distributions.
Yeah, I think so.
I would think that question 11 is a good one. 12 and 13 is you know, 11 and 14, I think, are good. 12 and 13 are, you know, good questions, but not as clearly related to the outcome that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could look at individual questions here, too, to see.
Sure.
What they do. See if there's, and it probably is useful to break some of these concepts apart.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, we clearly would also need to look at some sort of factor analysis to make sure that these are, you know, loading together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they really mm-hmm. measuring the same concept? And that might get us to the same conclusion, you know, that Dale's saying of, you know, maybe we'll find out that, you know, most of the measures hold together, but sampling is really 11 and 14 go together and 12 and 13 go together unrelated to the others.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why you wrote, okay, I get it. That's why you wrote that at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is just our guess. We think these should go together, but we're not sure that they're showing up together. Okay. Well, I would say that these initial results that you put together are certainly encouraging in the sense that there does appear to be some evidence that these really are prerequisites, which is, I believe, what we were basically setting out, kind of the new addition that we were trying to make to what Bob and Joan and Beth had done, was to say, okay, they put forward the idea that these are prerequisites, and so we're trying to put together an assessment item to test these, and we are, in fact, finding some support for the fact that they are prerequisites. Now, of course, given that we don't really know the population that we're doing this on, and you know, with all kinds of caveats, and it's a small sample size, and maybe the questions aren't so great, but at least it seems to be somewhat encouraging that it is going in the direction of what we set out to do.
Yeah, this broad sample has some advantages, too, and it's a very broad sample. It's not just all, you know, one subset. We could separate our sample, too, for that matter, into ones that we know are students versus ones that are more advanced.
Michael, what does GLM stand for?
General Linear Model.
A General Linear Model, okay.
You're looking at the PROC GLM?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I just wasn't sure what that stands for. I'm learning GMM right now. What is GM?
GMM?
What is GM? General Method of Moment.
Oh. Okay.
I have not.
I'll tell you how to do it once I've written my MATLAB code to figure out how to do it.
You're talking about finding a methods of moments estimator?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So let me ask you this. We definitely need to get more data, which means we need to get on our students and on our colleague students to try and get some better data. But before we do that, do we want to make any changes to get better questions? Or do we want to stick with this?
What we might do would be to do a little more analysis on these questions to see which ones are most encouraging and which ones aren't, and use that to guide us, too, because we probably can improve them.
Right.
Yeah, coming back to the discussion of the sampling distribution questions, I think we can do better there than just having either you're right or you're wrong, maybe adding some other questions. I'm not sure quite how to proceed. We've talked about a couple different options on that.
Well, and you know, I mean, I think that the novelty of what we are presenting is not just looking at any of the individual components, but the comparison between them.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, can we rely on what other people have already done and tested and validated? So, for example, we know Sharon Lane GTAS has this reasoning about p-value and statistical significance. That's one step beyond where we had originally conceived of, but maybe we throw that in. It's a 40-question test, I think, or something like that. But that's a reliable, validated assessment piece that's going to enable us to say, you know, how closely correlated is sampling distribution to hypothesis testing? If we can get a valid measurement of sampling distribution.
Right.
I mean, so I guess I envision this as, if we want to do a good test, we're talking about really creating a much larger instrument.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can assess sampling distribution with three or four questions.
What about, I haven't used specifically on the chaos test. Do they have one of their small tests on sampling distribution? I know they have like one on, you know, spread and one on center. Do any of you know if one of the small versions, you know, the 10 or 12 question ones, if they have one on sampling distribution?
I don't know.
No, I mean not the chaos, the artist. But you know how they have the chaos test, but then they also have these small versions that are questions just on a specific topic.
Yeah, you can search on pull out questions on a particular topic. Yeah, and they probably have a bank of
it. But that might be interesting to discover. Do they have they done any sort of tests on those? You know, that you know if they have more elaborate questions on them. I'm going to try to find out. Is any sort of validity to that?
Yeah, but I like that idea of taking advantage of what other folks have done, that you know, they've already done work on it.
Can we, I mean, maybe one possibility for a homework task for next week is for each of us to, you know, pick one of those topics and do a little more research of are there validated instruments out there? I don't know if we've ever done that. I mean, my recollection is we looked at the research on, you know, what went into prerequisite knowledge, but not are there validated tests out there that assess students' understanding of sampling, of variability, et cetera.
No, we didn't. We didn't ever do that. That would be a good idea.
Yeah, I doubt if we'll find whole scales on it, but we will, in the artists for sure, find various items that would relate to each of this. In fact, I think that's where we got some of them.
So, yeah, some of our items are from artists.
Yeah.
I just feel that we could, I'm just concerned, I hope I'm not sounding too negative, but I'm just concerned that we could spend a lot of time refining these items, you know, perhaps for naught, if there's something already out there, but also, you know, I don't know, I'm getting antsy to kind of get something from this. You know,
yeah.
I feel like we've been on this process for 2 years now.
Yeah, I agree. We need to put something together.
Yeah. Well, and what we have so far is looking encouraging. So maybe we can build on what we have.
I actually had a deadline for some reason. I'm trying to log on to the artist's website, and for some reason I keep getting a message that there's a problem with the website security certificate. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But anyway, what I was going to say is I have to send the paper that we're going to submit for the ICOT by October 31st, which is coming up very soon. So I need to do that this week. So I'm going to go back and look at whatever the latest stuff we had sent to Tisha was, take some of that out, lighten it up a little bit. But I definitely have to put something together in the next days so I can send that off. So what I'd like to do is try to do it, send it off to you guys, and try to get back to me as soon as you can with any comments. I know it's really last minute, but I'd like to at least send something off. And so the question is, do we want to put any of this kind of stuff in it or no? I think we had said no, that we keep it pretty light, that we and talk a bit more about the process, because part of this, the goal of this conference is on assessment. So focus more on trying to find good assessment questions and some of the resources that we use and the kinds of questions that we asked ourselves and some of the research we did and that kind of thing. Should I stick to that?
You have enough content with that?
I think so, yeah. It's not supposed to be a very long paper.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, it's not going to be great, but I want to get something together and send it off to them. You know, they've invited us to join them on their panel, and so I feel like, okay, we need to do it reasonably well and have something to send off for the proceedings in this.
So I think the process is interesting to folks who haven't been involved in it. I talked to people who haven't been involved. It's intriguing.
So should I stick to that? Leave all this these preliminary results out and maybe just mention them orally in the presentation section?
That sounds like it should work. I think that would be fine. I think if you start getting too much into results, a couple of problems. One is it will take a bit of time, and also it will, it'll take a bit of time. There could be quite a bit of work to do on that.
Michael, is that an opinion?
You guys are cutting out a little bit in the conversation. I didn't hear all of that.
Ah, okay. No, I was just trying to figure out for the paper that I submit for this ICOTS conference.
Right.
Should I leave out all these results and then, maybe mention something orally about what the direction we're going, but for now not put anything into the paper on this?
If this is the paper you're talking about, not, an enhanced abstract or something, right?
Right. We have to submit a paper for the proceedings.
Yeah, I would just, for your sanity's sake, I would just take the paper that we have been working on, right?
Yeah.
Although I guess I'm not sure because it depends how much of that we want to use elsewhere, right?
Right. Well, that's what I thought. We'd lighten that up a little bit and then add a little bit to it about the process of our, group and the way it works and that kind of thing. Have a section on process.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, I'll go with that then. I've got two huge assignments for PhD due, one on November 2nd and the other one on November 10th. So I'm not going to spend hours and hours and hours on this. I just need to get it together to get something out. So I will. I'll go with what we have and add a bit about the process and send it off to you. So hopefully get it to you like Tuesday or Wednesday. And if you can get back to me before Friday, that'd be great. If you can't, too bad. I'll send it as it is.
Right.
I'm sorry it's so late.
That's fine. Thank you. Glad you're doing it.
Do it. So shall we set up some tasks to do for next time? And I think, Michael, you suggested one. Let's find out, are there some valid instruments that exist?
Right.
Another would be, certainly I'm not teaching an introductory stats course right now, but I'm going to encourage my colleague who is to see if he can get his students to get on there and take this test so we get a little bit more data. Can you remind me, what do I need to do to have a code for them so that they can be recognized as our students?
Amanda can answer that.
After the 18 questions, they have a demographic question, and one of those questions asks for the code that their instructor provided them.
Okay.
And that can be just any, we can just use like a three-digit number or a word or something?
A word, yeah, three-digit number, anything like that.
Yeah, because nobody else is doing that, so just a code word or something. And if you want, you could potentially give every student their own code, and they each could put in their own code.
Well, I think maybe I'd do something like IUM for our school, IUM, and then give each student your number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever.
Perfect.
Would that work?
That would work fine, yeah. Yeah, and then when we get the data in that final column, we'll have a code, then you would be able then to track individual students.
Okay.
And we could aggregate the students from your class, too.
Okay.
It's the very last question.
Okay. Yes, because you said you were going to add that, but then I was supposed to do it last year, and I never did get my students to do it, so now I need to get on that. So we look up and see if we've got some valid instruments. For you want to try and pick different areas. Should we go for variability, for sampling and sampling distributions and so on? Should we break it down as we have in the past?
The same ones that we've done in the past. Yeah, that's fine.
Should pick up Tisha's. What was Tisha working on?
Distribution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe I can work. I don't anticipate finding a validated test focusing on these things, but I think we can find items for sure.
I think it would be interesting. I remember, unfortunately, I don't know why I'm not able to log on to the artist site right now, but I do know that they have the short set. So it would be worth contacting maybe Bob and finding out if any of those short sets, has, if they've done any sort of, you know, liberty testing on those.
URL, actually. And on the Y site, there's an updated link to artists.
Oh, okay.
Okay, where is it on Y?
Under links.
Under
I think
links.
General resources. So if you go to wise.cgu.edu, under links, there's our... I think general resources, there must be a link to artists.
I tried to get on artists as well. Are you talking about the certificate issue?
Yeah.
I had the same problem. For some reason, the Minnesota site has a bad security certificate on it or something.
Yeah,
that's right. No, okay.
Yeah, it's a new link that they're using.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Under teaching aids, the fourth link is to artists.
No, it's the same thing, even from that link. Same thing for the website security certificate. It must just be a problem they're having there momentarily, and we'll figure it out in the next couple of days. Okay. Well, how about my homework will be get this article done. So we can send something
else good.
To us.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, I did pass my exams from August, which is very
great. Congratulations.
Of course,
that's
none
excellent.
Of us had any doubts.
Well, I tell you, I did. We just got a request about 10 days ago, and only two people passed them. So they're pretty stiff on these. So now I'm particularly terrified for the next round, which is in January. So questions are on. But
yeah.
Keep your fingers crossed for me.
Well, you'll be ready, I'm sure.
I hope so. Should we set up a time for the next call?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Michael, I had just a quick question. I had asked Dale ahead of time if he had heard from Tisha at all, because I haven't. Have you heard anything at all from her?
I got an email from someone else who had been in touch with Tisha that they've adopted a child.
Oh, great. So it looks like it went through. Okay.
So it sounds like it went through.
Okay, super. Okay.
But I haven't heard anything from Tisha.
Okay. So where are we today? The 21st.
The 4 weeks from today is November 18, if that's a good day, Wednesday.
Yeah, that's okay with me.
That's okay with me.
And now... We may have an issue with daylight savings time. We will have changed by then, I think.
So will we. We change this coming weekend.
Okay. Okay. So then if we say 1 o'clock again?
So the same time
sounds
as now.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, not 1. Yeah, same time as now, in other words. Yeah. Yeah, right.
You just think about yourself, Dale. You're...
I think he thought it was going to be 1 a.m. your time. He was thinking about you, Michelle, just miscalculating.
Well, I'll tell you, as enthusiastic as I am about speaking to you guys.
There are limits, huh?
1 a.m. might be pushing it.
Yeah. Okay, well,
okay, so
I'll set up the call and let Tisha know also.
Great.
And listen, thanks again, you guys, for Amanda.
We'll have a chance to do some more analyses on these data then, too. And Michael probably will, too. And I think I'd be interested in looking at some of the individual items to see how they behave.
Right. Well, I mean, part of my reason for sending out the SAS code was that if anybody wants to, mimic what I've done and just take the SAS code from there.
Yeah.
You're welcome to do that.
And that kind of grouping is useful, I think.
Yeah, thanks a lot for doing that, both of you and Amanda for getting the data together and giving us something else. Because I think we did need a little boost of encouragement there, and that was very, very helpful. So thanks to all of you. And I'm going to go to bed. So good night, everybody.
Right.
On that note.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
All right.
And I'll send you out the paper next week.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll watch for it.
Take care. Bye. Thank you, Amanda.
Sure. Have a good
Thanks.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.